The near post, get there first, don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first, if it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.
Hi and welcome to the Near Post. I am Nick Amies, and joining me today I have Clive McKillop and Gerald Croft. How are you?
G'day, thanks, folks. Nick. Terrific, Nick.
We've got a big week of football to discuss. The new broadcast deal, obviously, the Socceroos getting a nice win against South Korea, and if we have time for it, we'll actually discuss the A-League. So if you want to tell us how much you like the show or any criticisms that you may have, contact us on our email, nearpostradio@gmail.com. You can catch the podcast on nearpost.blogspot.com as well as on iTunes under the name Nearpost Football. Kick off the show today, guys. I'm just going to ask you, what was your favourite match of the A-League round just gone?
Clive?
Oh, I really enjoyed the Brisbane-Sydney game. I thought that was fabulous. I really enjoyed Del Piero's goal. As kind of we all have been enjoying his skill, and whenever he's on the field, I feel that you're just going to be dragging in the supporters because he's just a talent. He's a real talent. Big fan.
Can't argue with that, Clive. I think it was an outstanding performance from the individual and a good game of football. But I think I go a long way. My memory goes back a long way, actually, in Australian football to see a good 45 minutes like the Melbourne victory gave us. I was absolutely gobsmacked at the quality that game possessed, and also the way that the crowd took to it. Yeah, super. Great highlight for the A-League.
This might be an opportunity for Nick to explore his Central Coast bias here, but...
yeah, I must say I was pretty impressed by our efforts once against Melbourne Victory, especially once we went down to 10 men. But yeah, look, we're doing well. Haven't lost for quite a while now. Big game on the weekend against Brisbane. That's the crunch game. We haven't beat them at home in quite a while. So if that goes well, I'll start to put a smile on my face and put some money down on us to win the grand final. But until then, we'll see.
Putting the tribalism aside, Nick, I think the point of view of where the A-League's been and where it's going, I think it's just been another outstanding week for what I see as the greater professionalism of the A-League. And I think that's all and sundry to be congratulated for that.
Yeah. Got to agree with that. The crowds are up. It's it's very, very positive for everybody, and it's great to watch. I've been enjoying watching all the games.
Yeah, the crowds have risen. The most importantly, the TV audiences have risen almost 30% from last season's figures, which kind of leads us into our first item of the day, which was the new broadcast deal that was announced on Monday. This was Ben Buckley's swan song. He had to get a good one here, otherwise we'd just label him a complete failure. This way, he's slightly redeemed himself. Yeah, $160 million. For the FFA, 148 straight up front cash, which is going to, provide for all the A-League clubs' as salary caps will be covered, which is amazing. It's going to take a lot of that financial burden off the clubs. But I'm going to just ask you what you guys think about the free-to-air coverage. So one live game on a Friday night, and then we've got a highlights package plus all the finals on a one-hour delay. Do you think that's enough to start off for the A-League?
Well, I think it's a bit of a taster. I think this is the old commercial corporation sucking in the free-to-air audience who aren't buying Fox at the moment. And I'm kind of a little suspicious. I mean, you've got 5 years for that to happen. You can grab a whole bunch of viewers during that time. And later on, you can then say, right, we're going to make it all satellite again. And that means that people have then got to buy contracts in Fox. But I really like the idea of having it on free-to-air. I think it does open it up to the A-League. The A-League to the ordinary viewer who doesn't have Fox. And certainly the more people that are watching, the more people get out to games as well.
Can't disagree with that at all. There's the old and the grumpy in me that says, gee, what is it that that I can see that that isn't working, or what I don't like about what it is that I've read? And really, the only thing I can come up with is perhaps in the short term, we could have got some more money if indeed... we hadn't gone free to air, but I think the gains in the medium and long term will far outweigh a smaller financial imposition within the first couple of years. I think we're now opening the doors for free to air to rope more people into watching our game. And I take your point, Clive, about whether or not we will actually see more people turning over to Fox, and I think there is a commercial imperative along that. But ultimately, I think we'll have more younger people. We'll be broadening the demographic for the game, and I think that's going to be super in the long run.
Just to add to that, I really like the idea of having a free-to-air highlights package, because I think that was, for me, that was the thing that I really wanted to watch when the EPL first started, and we couldn't get that unless we had satellite. And the EPL, that's really what sold me on the EPL, like watching that. And so highlights package, great idea. It's going to get a lot of new viewers.
Would you argue that they already have basically a highlights package every Monday night on the World Game program that they have?
It's fairly restricted vision they have. It's not, I think, I'm not sure what the deal is with SBS, but, you know, it seems to me that having a proper edited show with highlights from all games and maybe all the goals.
Perhaps some more analysis about the matches and that sort of thing.
Although I'm not sure how the kind of more intellectual SBS analysis is going to fit with the
obviously Craig Foster's going to have some sort of input in the show. We can surmise that much. But obviously, SBS has been a great promoter of football on Australian television. But do you think it might have been more successful had it been on, say, your Channel 7, your Channel 9, your Channel 10? Is there more of an audience on those networks that would possibly tune in?
Is that a Dorothy Dixadick? I don't think there's a snowball's chance in hell that the commercial stations would have been able to put it and present the game in the way that I think the football-loving public would actually take to. We've seen it. I think the public have sucked it in, and I think they've spat it out.
The Channel 7 experience, I think, was, if you go back a few years, the Channel 7 experience where the game was pretty much cut to ribbons. We were suffering huge numbers of ad breaks during the broadcast, and it was appalling. And I just don't trust them to do a real coverage. I think I do trust SBS to do a real coverage, and that one that the free-to-air viewers are going to want to watch.
So you reckon that this will not only bring in those older viewers who were disillusioned by the poor free-to-air coverage in the past, but it's going to get the younger ones into it as well? I mean, obviously,
almost certainly. Look, it's one of these situations where people actually trust SBS for being a bit more of a professional organisation. I'm frankly not a big fan of commercial TV. I think a lot of the stuff that we've watched, especially sporting events, and if you look back through the years on a number of the big sporting events that have been held on commercial television, they've also been cut to ribbons. And we've had stuff like, you know, going off to ad breaks and coming back and having missed something because they couldn't.
Don't even get me started on those sorts of things. It's just woeful. I especially love it when they like to do highlights of a moment in the match that just happened, and then you cut back and they're back into another like main passage of play and something else has just happened. It's like, well,
yeah, we missed that as well.
Can't I just have like maybe a little split screen in the bottom corner or something like that? Yeah, it's really good to see it back on free-to-air. I'm really excited for that one. I'm a bit disappointed that they don't have any sort of youth league feature. I've tried to keep in touch with the National Youth League. Obviously, it not running very long is a main problem. But when you go onto the FFA website, there's no information at all. Like, you get your match reports, but there's no stats on who's the leading goal scorer. I'd have to, like, go through all the match reports and tally it up myself. Even just, like, who started the game and who finished the game for each side would be awesome.
All right. Well, this is a hobby horse of mine as well.
There's a lot of hobby horses out there, Clive.
A lot of hobby horses out there, yeah. Look, the way the FFA's operated, and everybody's got to give them some credit for this because it's actually worked. It's been something where the A-League has driven the future of football in this country, plus the national team fortunes has also been involved. We've found that some of the other sectors of football have had a bit more token funding, and if you look at the way that filming is done a lot of these games, it's a token video footage for a lot of those games, so you wouldn't really be seeing very much from NYL games. You'd really need something like they've got in rugby league, where they've got the Toyota Cup, and they have people covering the youth games in the morning, and then you have the main game in the afternoon. But it needs funding and it needs sponsorship to do that, which it doesn't seem to have at the moment.
Now, I agree with that. If I can just take you back a couple of minutes, Nick. I think the Australian public, in regard to watching football, that's our football, is more sophisticated than the commercial stations will let on. I think anyone who watches the game on television are watching football being played around the world that is televised incredibly well. And that's the model we need to have in Australia. And that's the model I think that only SBS can provide us with.
Yeah.
Controversy.
They're definitely the leading sports broadcasters when it comes to football, or the proper football. Their World Cup coverage has been excellent the last two tournaments. So hopefully, just onwards and upwards from there. But what was interesting is that Lowy didn't, he completely ruled out raising the salary cap despite this new deal. Now, when the EPL did their new deal just recently, everyone just all of a sudden jumped on the whole "I want more wages" bandwagon. So, is this potentially diluting the quality of the league by not capitalising on giving those clubs that extra room to buy more quality imports, that sort of thing, increase the profile of the league, and then 5 years' time, we've got a stronger domestic league that will probably even fetch more for a new broadcast deal?
Are we in a situation, though, where the same standard players are going to be paid more? And, I mean, that might be great for the players, but is it necessarily going to attract better players to this country? Because you might be paying more for the same product. And it might be better off. I mean, I'm a bit cynical about salary caps anyway in general, because I think if you look at Europe these days, it's absolutely
impossible.
Ridiculous.
It's impossible.
It's ridiculous. And it's not sustainable in this country to expect to be paying masses of money for... And we've got pretty good deals with the marquee players that we've got here at the moment, and they seem to have stepped up support just having just the... It's almost a token thing in each team, but it's people are going out to watch them.
Is it possible that they could maybe introduce a second marquee player for each? I mean, we have the Australian marquees, but a second international marquee just to, you know, add that extra incentive.
I think that'd be wonderful.
Because you see a lot of A-League teams just buying like their main attacking player as a marquee, but then as we see with Sydney FC, their defence is woeful. Maybe a decent like holding midfielder who has some sort of international renown just bring more balance to the side. I think
if your question is that we now have more money flowing into our game, and will a significant amount of that more money be paid to the players, or will more be going to, shall we say, other parts of the game, I think that we are now at a stage where enough people realise that more money has to flow into the game, not just into the players' pockets. And that's not to suggest that the players won't gain from the added income that's coming in, but I think we become more intelligent about how we will spend the money that comes. Clive was mentioning the EPL, and indeed you had said that the new television deal has been done in the UK. That new television deal has been done, but it's interesting to note that there are three or four clubs that have already made public statements about having to control what's going to happen with the increase in money that's actually flowing on. I understand that in 2 years' time, the Football League champions in England will actually be taking $100 million first prize for their TV deal. Now, that's an insane amount of money. And the side that will get relegated will still be earning $50 million.
Because they've got their parachute payment scheme, don't they?
And they've got parachutes on top of that. Now, that money cannot flow directly into the pockets of the players.
No, you need to build that off-field infrastructure.
I suppose what I'm saying is that we are now having more stuff that's being done to be able to say, how can that money be better utilised? Because the game's eating itself, and that's an outstanding example.
So obviously we have the salary cap. So now, with that being covered, is it really who spends their money the best that's going to consistently finish at the top of the league? So investing in things like building a proper youth development structure. Obviously, clubs will be better in the long term. Making sure they have a decent stadium agreement deal in all that sort of stuff, and just building their community reach programs.
Some of that formula has to be tested.
Yeah.
I mean, remembering, and I've just got to say this because it's kind of an important point about our local league. It's really still a very young league.
Yeah.
And, I mean, a lot of that infrastructure hasn't been developed properly. And the clubs have taken different directions. Some have invested in sort of, you know, revitalising their stadia rather than...
Or just assuming that putting it all into the team will make the fans come. But if you have a good team, as we saw with Gold Coast, if you have a good team but you don't back it up with some sort of community involvement, people won't want to come see you play. They're just going to say, oh, Gold Coast United, I don't really care about them. What have they done for me?
I agree with that, and I think there are lots of other areas which aren't necessarily the areas that come first to mind. I think we need to look very hard and fast at how the state leagues are set up, because I think they are a feeder for the A-League, and we haven't spoken a lot about that. I think the referees and how the referees need to approach, and that's not just the referees in the A-League, it's how the referees overall do. The professionalising of the game in this country requires more than just working on the A-League. It's great, that's where it started, but we've got to see at some point in time where the game gains from it, not just the A-League.
Yeah. We've started to see the CFA funneling down their philosophy. So they've started the Australian Premier League's system, which will take effect in most states next year. I believe that Northern New South Wales and Victoria and South Australia will go the year after. So they're looking at clubs who can possibly, you know, move along that professional pathway and possibly, you know, form a second division in the future. So they're just, like, it's coming, but whether they're doing it right, we can't really tell at the moment. There's not really too many examples that we have to follow. I mean, the MLS, similar situation, but the American sporting marketplace is still vastly different to ours at the moment. So,
plus, I don't think there's the groundswell of football support in the United States. I know it was a hugely college-supported type of groundswell they originally had, and there isn't the kind of general public interest.
I was looking at the statistics for the Gridiron College Bowl crowds as opposed to the football College Bowl crowds. Now, obviously, college football over there is massive. So the finals for those
men's
sorts
and
of things,
women's league.
Yeah, the finals for the NFL, the college NFL, 100,000 supporters, and most of these grounds for these college teams house at least 60,000. And then the finals for the college soccer or whatever they call it over there was in a 10,000 seater stadium, which they didn't even half fill. It's astounding how much of a difference there is, and just on the two sports, it's mind-boggling. Obviously, you won't get that sort of disparity between rugby league and soccer over here. So we probably are in a better position to capitalise on, you know, the level of participation that we get at youth levels.
Let me throw this out to you. It's already been publicly stated that there will not be any expansion teams for at least 4 years. What's your call on that?
It's a pretty difficult situation because there's a lot of variables up in the air. Like, obviously, you have potential investors that can probably come in and bankroll those sorts of things. But even, say, your classic Sydney situation, you've got clubs in Sydney that have been around for ages and could probably go back to professional status if they really put it in. So I think it's a bit early to say, oh, we're definitely not going to expand for this amount of time, because we said that about North Queensland. We said, oh, it's too soon. If they had have stuck with it, it would have worked. It's just they've got to identify these things properly, which I get, because the Western Sydney Rovers bid was horrible. So, look, it's a bit difficult to say absolute terms like that. I just think they should say, we're not looking for the next 3 to 4 years, but if someone really makes a name for themselves, we'll probably reconsider it.
Given the 8 years that the A-League's been in existence, you can say they've changed their mind about a lot of these things. I don't know how many times. I actually think maybe North Queensland was a bridge too far. I actually think Gold Coast was a better prospect. And unfortunately, you know, you never know when the backers are not going to be there anymore. So for me, if it's going to be a genuine National League, it needs to not just have Melbourne and Sydney teams, which it looks like starting to become again. We've got two Melbourne teams, two Sydney teams. And I'm still not 100% convinced they can support crowd-wise, anyway, both their teams.
Yeah, well, the problem with the Melbourne Heart is that they started off really well, but now their crowds are starting to head down towards the 6,000 mark, which, considering all the other crowds are increasing like wildfire, it's just,
let's give credit where credit's due, though. We've got West Sydney Wanderers that have actually come out of nowhere, and if there was ever a circumstance that was going to fall on its face, it was going to be West Sydney. At the moment, clearly it's working. So if they find themselves being in a good position at the end of the season, and that's not necessarily about a place, but as far as them holding a significant part of the Sydney marketplace, then it's got to have been a good decision by FFA. So as much as there has been some mistakes in that regard, and they're all glaringly obvious, perhaps pushing West Sydney was actually a good move. But only time is going to tell with those things.
As a defiant Canberra A-League team supporter, I've got to say, I would love to see a team come through here. I know lots of people say, oh, it's never going to happen. I think there's enough community support here to support.
I was really crossing my fingers that we would get it, and then we'd come in next year for the whole centenary of Canberra situation.
That
would
have been great, wouldn't it?
It would have been very nice.
Perfect launch.
But, it's a bit late now.
Look, I'm never the supreme optimist. I'm sure, I'm totally convinced it's going to happen here. Just whether or not I'm old enough and have my marbles when it happens is another thing.
Well, is there any country that doesn't have their capital city? Yeah,
that's the exact argument that we're saying. I mean, New Zealand's capital city has a team in our league, but the Australian capital doesn't. It doesn't quite add up.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, we'll just move on to the Socceroos now, because we're starting to run out of time a little bit. So we all know
it's a passionate.
It's a good debate. So we all know what happened last week against South Korea. We ended up winning 2-0 after going down with the early goal. Obviously, the injection of the young players did seem to turn the tide of the game, which was pretty impressive. But I'm just wondering, Schwarzer and Neil started these games. Now, surely, they've been around in the setup long enough that Osijek knows what they produce and whether they should be in the team or not. Did he really need to call these guys up and play them for the whole game?
Well, you started by saying we know what happened last week. Look, we know what the score was, but I'm not really sure many people do know what happened. And what you just mentioned about why there were players selected is it's beyond me. I don't know. I can't put any rationale around a friendly game in foreign shores. And I really don't know which direction the Socceroos are heading at the moment.
Strategy, though, from coaches is often a mystical point, I've got to say. I mean, we've seen a lot of coaches come through coaching the Socceroos, and you hear critics on all sides saying why they choose this player or not choose that player. For me, it would have been an ideal thing to be trying out your young bloods, the guys that you think might work in the next generation. We've never had a fantastic succession plan with national teams. It always seems to be you've got to wait until they pull up lame.
Although, having said that, a lot of national teams do seem to struggle with that. They had their golden generation, and they just hold on to them so hard that once they finally leave, they do tail off for a few years because they were just so dependent on them, and they just didn't foresee the eventual
retirement. I'm probably going to take you to task about that. I think a number of European teams have done a very good job in actually blooding young players in big games, and there's quite a number of teams in Europe that have actually done some very successful things with their youth program. Just having, you know, just even using them for just the odd 10 or 12 minute period at the end of a game. And that's a hell of a difference to someone who's never had any international experience at that level.
I think the irony is that there are so many people that are scratching their heads about what actually happened last week. What happens on paper is that we actually have a Socceroos team that's won away in Korea for the first time in 40 years. So in the record books is a wonderful away win, even though it's a friendly, for our coach. Yet we don't know where we're going with the team. And I think therein lies the issue with the Socceroos at the moment.
The other thing I'd say there is, and I'm not sure whether you guys agree with this, but Mark Schwartz has actually been going through a bit of a form dip at the moment. I mean, I've watched him in the EPL. He's had a really rough time.
Yeah, he did have a good game against Arsenal, unfortunately, for me, because I am an Arsenal supporter.
Yeah, but based on form...
He is starting to tail off, definitely.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that, you know, on form, maybe he might have come second to... There are some great goalkeepers in Australia at the moment. We've seen a lot of them in action in the last A-League round, and... I would have thought one of them maybe would have won a place.
We know what Schwartz has produced consistently over the last few years, so I didn't really see the point in calling him out if he was just going to produce the same stuff that he's always been giving. Like, you have a lot of young goalkeepers in there. You really should see if they're capable of stepping up into an international stage and performing the way they have for their clubs.
I think sometimes that means, like in fixtures like this, where, you know, and I'm not really sure, I mean, I can't really understand a lot of the coach's decisions recently, but that's because, I guess, you know, I'm not him, and so I don't know what's driving his selection policy. And frankly, I'm not even sure how many players he's selected in total over the last couple of months. It seems to be quite a lot, you know, for trials and just for looking at different sets of experience. But I would really have liked to have seen maybe not a second string side, but certainly a younger side just to start the game.
Well, speaking of younger sides, the Socceroos actually playing in a tournament, shall we say. It is a qualifying tournament, but it's a tournament nonetheless. At the start of December, it's the East Asian Cup qualifying tournament. So East Asian Football Federation has its, you know, regional tournament in 2013. The three teams that have already qualified are Korea Republic, China, Japan. And then there's space for one team, which is what we're all what these teams will be fighting for in December. It's a pretty straight in and out tournament. 8 days, every team plays each other once. So we're up against the likes of Guam, Chinese Taipei, Hong Kong, and DPR Korea.
What does Australia get? What do they gain from being in this tournament, Nick?
So, obviously, if you win the tournament, you go on to the final tournament, shall we say, next July, which is against, obviously, the higher quality Asian teams. And then, even if you win these games by quite a hefty margin, that is FIFA ranking points, which will boost the, you know, coefficient, or whatever you like to call it, of the Australian national team. But it is outside of FIFA international dates. So I think it's a good chance for Holger Osiak to call up even more of those younger players and to see what sort of stock he has, because three of these teams are ranked in the 170th or lower. So it's going to be a hearkening back to the old days of Oceania, I think, if we really call up some decent players.
So hold on, so will clubs be allowed to release their players to play for the national side?
I think what we saw with the Asian Cup qualifiers a few years back, where they were outside of FIFA dates, the FFA did make, you know, the clubs release their players. Obviously, there is restrictions as to how long they have to do it before the games and stuff, but as it stands, it would clash with both round 9 and round 10 of the A-League season, which, when you have only 27 rounds to play, can be a pretty big loss if you are building up some decent momentum, or you really need a win.
Not to mention those fringe players that are actually playing for European clubs as well. Can you see them being released by German second division clubs?
I definitely would not think so. However, I'm pretty sure most of the Asian leagues will have finished by this stage, so there is a chance that you could see the likes of Luke De Vere, Matt McKay, and so on, all come back for those games. But I don't think it's really worth calling them up for, you know, one decent game against DPR Korea and then a few warm-up matches. I reckon they should pick some of the best younger players on the fringes of A-League squads, put them together, and then see what happens.
Yeah, I think an experimental squad should be the way to go with this. I mean, really, you're only talking about... That's North Korea, isn't it, that playing
yeah,
there?
Yeah, North Korea.
North Korea is really the only side that's going to be of any major consequence. So I don't consider the others it'd be that tough, and you could easily get away with an experimental side there, and that could be a lot of good work for the coach in plumbing out succession.
Wouldn't it be good if he actually put that vision down so we could actually see where he was going with it?
Yeah, there's a distinct lack of communication between, well, just the general higher-ups at the FFA and the public as to what they want to do with the game, which is a bit disappointing. But, yeah, obviously time will tell what they're going to do with that sort of thing. But, yeah, I think, as it stands, they should, you know, try... They really need a decent plan for who's going to feature in 2014, because R.G. Thompson will be 36 by that stage, and if we're still relying on him to score our goals, there's something seriously wrong. Yeah.
Crutches.
Yeah, he'll be back into the days of Pippo Inzaghi, apparently, when he was still playing in Milan at the age of 40. He would just train once a week, sit on his bed for, like, the whole week, rest his bones, all that sort of stuff, and then he'd get out, play a game. That's not really the sort of situation we want to happen, but, you know, if Archie Thompson can score in a World Cup match against Germany, I'm not going to complain, but I don't think it's very likely as it
seems. You'd have to concede there are a lot of up-and-coming strikers to take Archie Thompson's spot.
Yeah, the future is looking a lot brighter. I'm just not sure whether the FFA is looking towards the future yet, or they're just focusing on the here and now. But yeah, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for today, guys, but thanks for coming in. And if you're going to the Near Post, get there first.
The Near Post, get there first, don't get there second, don't get there third. The Near Post, get there first, if it's for football news that you thirst. The Near Post, get there.